In 2015, Robert Eggers stepped into the conversation of filmmakers to keep an eye on with his directorial debut, The Witch. His work was praised for its historical authenticity and dark, unsettling tone. 4 years later, he returned to the director's chair for The Lighthouse, which would go on to cement him as one of the most talented filmmakers working today. And now, in 2022, Eggers is back once again, this time taking us into the vivid, violent, and vengeful world of Vikings. So join us on this episode of Script or Screen as we ascend to Valhalla with The Northmen.
A quick announcement before we begin. Chris and Zach have made the executive decision to lift the ban on profanity. At last, no more cartoon thwacking noises in place of naughty words. You all get to hear every nasty syllable from this moment forward. So without further ado, let's fucking do this.
Welcome back, lovely listeners, to another wonderful edition of Script or Screen. As always, I am one of your hosts, Chris, Sinus Infection Kitchen, alongside my other most Vikingly of co-hosts, Zach Strachman. Zach, how are you today?
I have a thirst for blood, and I must pillage and destroy!
Yikes, how very barbaric of you.
Chris, for thousands of years, we lay sleeping dormant, only for now for us to rise back up. We're back from our little break.
It was quite the amazing of breaks. Honestly, I feel quite refreshed. I don't know.
It was a sabbatical.
Do I feel refreshed right now? Actually, I do not. I've been like battling this like ear and nose thing for the last couple days, and that sucks. But however, there has been a lot of things going on in the time between then that does make me feel refreshed for coming back. You know, we went and saw a couple movies. We're watching some shows. A couple shows just finished. Trailers have been dropping around us. What the hell's been going
on? Absolutely. We're going to talk about all of it because, I mean, we need to catch up with literally everything we haven't been talking about in the past, like, what, 2 months?
Yeesh.
Yeesh. We've been on vacation, but we're back. We're back, and it's just you're gonna get it from us. I don't think we should waste any time here, Chris. I think we should let's talk real fast about what have you been watching in the time that we've been away.
So we discussed last time about starting Winning Time.
Yes.
Still haven't seen it much more past the first episode, but that's okay because I have been watching Moon Knight, which I just finished tonight.
I have also finished Moon Knight.
And I gotta say, the show did not disappoint, and I can't wait to share the rest of my thoughts on it with the lovely listeners in a future episode.
Oh yeah, I think that'll be coming up pretty soon. I was keeping up with Winning Time. I haven't watched like the last two episodes because I had family visiting, and then I was just tired on a Sunday night, and I'm like, not tonight. But there's got too many movies that I still haven't had a chance to catch up, and I still want to see Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes.
Massive weight of, unbearable weight of massive talent.
The Nicolas Cage story.
That's right. And just, you know, so much, so many things.
You know, I did watch the first two episodes of Tokyo Vice, the one that series on HBO Max starring Ansel Elgort and Ken Watanabe.
Ooh, Hollywood's favorite Japanese man.
Evidently. But I have definitely enjoyed those two episodes. I think they're only on episode 5-ish or 6 right now. It's not a very long season, I don't think. I think maybe they said the first one was only... They dropped the first 3 episodes on its night of release.
Okay.
But I was enjoying the first two episodes. It's a kind of nice... journalistic story, if you will.
Nice. That's Michael Mann, right?
It is Michael Mann, the one and only. You know, I had a college professor that met Michael Mann and would not stop talking about that experience. if only he could see me now.
You want to know about the time I met Michael Mann?
You know what's funny is that I definitely emailed him once, said I one-upped him, and I met Bob Redford. Ooh. And I said, you know, he messaged me back saying, "This guy with the Bob in quotations."
That's pretty great. I also I have been watching and I'm up to date with it. The final season of Better Call Saul has started.
Oh,
and
it fuck is you. I started rewatching it season 5 just because like I know I have fallen behind, and so I needed that. And I could talk about that opening scene, by the way, just because I rewatched it. I'm like, God damn it. There was something about this that was just kind of weird to me. But we could talk about that when we talk about Better Call Saul, if you'd like.
But I got to tell you, season 6, they still haven't missed a beat. They're still firing on all cylinders.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I hate? And I don't hate this, but they've definitely like threw it out all over in the media that like there was going to be a return of some, you know, very famous Breaking Bad characters. And I'm like, I almost wish that was, like, kind of a secret, but at the same time...
I totally agree with you, and I'll tell you why. Because in the most recent episode that came out for the show, they brought back a very small character from Breaking Bad. A very almost unimportant character. I think they only appeared in, like, 2 or 3 episodes in the entire Breaking Bad run. But it was one of those characters that stood out, was kind of, like... fun to watch back in Breaking Bad. So I was like, oh, they brought them back, and oh, they're doing the thing they did. Okay. So it was fun. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then I, just this past week, a couple of days ago, went to go see Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Damn it, you ass. I'll tell you what. Please forgive me, though. I haven't been able to see it yet, only because I've been working on a television show right now.
Oh, big... Oh, look, watch out, we got a badass over here.
I don't mean to toot my own horn, Zach, but today was a very nice day for me.
That's good.
Yeah, I am officially a member of my local IATSE union. And
hey!
I'm pretty fucking stoked about that.
Can we get, like, some audience applause right in this section right here?
Wow, Billy. That was so, that sucked.
Chris,
I see this on the screen too, and yeah, I have no idea what the fuck is going on.
We are about, it's about to kick us out, in 10 minutes.
Upgrade now. What the fuck did they, no, they this did is, not.
This has never happened before.
This has never happened before. Billy, you have to cut this segment out because.
where did we leave off? You were talking about, oh. So we had the audience applause. Okay, so that's awesome that you are, I believe, a unioned man now.
I am, you know, my anti-communist grandfather is so disappointed.
He's rolling in his, I don't know, I didn't want to say grave, he might be alive.
This one's still rocking. He's okay, hanging good. Out.
He's just... crossing his arms, disappointed on his porch, like, going,
"Mer, you get health insurance now. Kids, back in my kids, day,
you
we didn't
kids
have
these
health
days,
insurance.
You kids with your unions and your Marxism." but I will say, yeah, definitely when you get a chance, check out Doctor Strange, because I think we're going to cover it on here, talk about we it on are. Here. But I'll tell you something, Chris.
Tell me something.
It was an experience at this Doctor Strange showing.
Oh?
Yes, where I and many other people, pretty much everyone who went to go see the movie and who will go see the movie, was audience to the first trailer of Avatar 2, Return of the Jungleman.
No! You're and kidding me. They did not release an actual trailer.
They did, and I gotta say, it looks pretty good. It looks like, you know... As far as, like,
does it look
listen,
like Pocahontas 2?
You're talking to somebody who, like, I like Avatar. I think it's a great film. I don't think it's an entirely engaging film.
You know
what?
With, like, the most incredible antagonist in the world, the Jungleman.
The Jungleman.
Like, you know, who could forget?
We're going to start doing our favorite Jungleman quotes here. On script or screen, I only remember one thing he says in the first movie, which is, "How does it feel to betray your race?"
Oh, I remember this one. It's, "I'm gonna get you your legs back."
Oh, that's good. That's a good Jungleman quote. But I gotta say, it looks pretty good. It looks like, you know, it's got like whales now, and they're like, it's they're in the water and they're flying through the sky. And Jake Sully has dreadlocks now.
Oh,
I'm like, that's cultural appropriation.
And do we get any human Sam Worthington?
No, but there were definitely humans in it.
Okay.
And there's other, like, avatars that are, like, with guns and stuff. So I don't know, man. It looks cool. I'm hyped. It's coming out December. I don't know what day in December, but it's happening.
December 2020 never?
Who knows? I mean, maybe some last minute James Cameron's like, wait, I just thought of some absurd
four-hour-long sequence that we need to have in this film. We can't release it until we do it. In fact, let's reshoot the whole thing.
Exactly.
Oh my god, I wish you'd do that to Disney. That would be amazing. Imagine how bankrupt they would be by the end of this project.
Dude, I can't wait for Avatar 4. I don't even remember what the stupid title of it's called, but it's got like some really... Revenge of the Jungleman.
This is Return of the Jungleman. And then the next one is going to be...
He takes the movie off because...
Yeah. It's The Jungleman Sleeps. And then...
The Jungleman Wakes.
Oh, there you go. Awakens, man. Perhaps. And then there's going to be a weird one. It's going to be called The Last Jungleman.
Oh.
You know?
And then Rise of the Jungleman.
Ah, that one's going to suck ass, dude. I'm not looking forward to that one at all.
Me neither. Somehow. And then they will cast, and follow me on this, Oscar Isaacs, right? And, he'll play someone, just a main character in it, and he'll say, somehow, the Jungleman returned. Oh, we need to get on with this movie review.
Yeah.
The Northmen. Chris, before we dig into the nitty and the gritty...
I don't know that I'm ready for this.
Just give me like a couple sentences, non-spoiler. What'd you think of The Northmen?
What did I think of The Northmen?
What did you think of The Northmen?
One, this movie was a trip.
Yeah.
I had zero expectation going into this film. I don't know if you know this, Zach. I know absolutely nothing about Vikings or anything relating to any of that. I may be a white man, but that is a culture I have, like, far from appropriated. In fact, I've left it behind. And with that being said, wow, I have also never seen The Witch. The Lighthouse.
Added to the list, ladies and gentlemen. Dude, The Witch is one of my favorite movies. I have a shirt. It says Black Phillip. I got a pin that says Live Deliciously. I have the A24, like, published script book for The Witch.
You're a Witch fanboy.
I loved it, man. It was so good.
Dude, so with all that being said, like, this film was a straight-up visual... like, circus of trippy sequences and, like, uber-violent, unexpected beheadings that made me want to cringe in my seat at times, like, you know, for all those audio listeners.
Yeah, I can definitely, I guess we'll say, we saw this movie together with your lady friend Anissa and a buddy of ours, and so we got to kind of have this nice group horrible cringe reaction. What was that noise you made? Because that was, yeah, I think all of us at various stages of the film made that noise.
Oh my god, I was not expecting that.
As someone who, like, I love the whole Norse Viking aesthetic, mythology, I love all that stuff. Obviously, like, in, like, Lord of the Rings, which is, like, my big time stuff, like the writers of Rohan, the Rohirrim, they have that big, you know, all their stuff, their architecture and their everything about them is very Norse inspired. I've watched all 6 seasons of Vikings and the new, Vikings Valhalla on Netflix. And I don't care if they're not, like, the most 100% accurate shows. They're still pretty awesome. And, I played a little bit of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, but it was just, couldn't hold me.
It was like, all right.
But that's just because I don't like Ubisoft games. But, when I was like, I am ready for some Viking shit, and boy, was I not disappointed.
Yeah, I don't really know. I had no expectation going in. What I saw was like, this was pretty, it was pretty in a very grotesque way. It was like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. The dirt looked gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, I feel like it's when we start talking details is really when most of it's going to come out. It's just because, like, I want to say that there were definitely parts of the film, like, I didn't expect it for it to be so straightforward, like, in its storytelling. I didn't expect, I didn't really know what to expect in terms of, like, performances for, like, from the actors. I liked kind of the fact that we get to see the culture, but I think there was a sense of, like, what Eggers was trying to tell about the culture that I think plays an interesting kind of theme or, like, kind of motif, like, in the whole, the story as a whole.
Absolutely.
And so, with all that being said, I think we should get into it.
Indeed. Do you want to hit him with a synopsis?
I do. And forgive me if I mispronounce anything.
They got some weird names going on there, so.
They do. Here we go. The Northmen. Prince Amleth is on the verge of becoming a man when his father is brutally murdered by his uncle, who kidnaps the boy's mother. 2 decades later, Amleth is now a Viking who's on a mission to save his mother, kill his uncle, and avenge his father. That's...
Boom. And, that's very much on the point. He literally is like, I will avenge you, father. I will rescue you, mother. I will kill you. What's his uncle's name? Fjolnir. Yeah, this movie's fucking awesome. Northmen, released in 2022, is an epic historical fiction film directed by one Robert Eggers, who co-wrote the screenplay with a man who is just credited as Sean.
Is it pronounced Sean or...
On his Wikipedia page, it says pronounced Sion.
Sigjorn Bjørngjør...
Sigjorn... Yeah. Means a sight. Okay, you know what? I can dig it. It's cool. He did a good job. It is based on the legend of Amleth.
I do want to add that this gentleman that we're just butchering his name, he co-wrote Lamb that sweet. Just came out.
Ooh, I really want to see that. I really want to see it. So, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
So this is based off the legend of Amleth from the Saxo Grammaticus, which if you don't know your Norse history, basically a lot of Norse history was not written down because they were not a culture of writing things. They didn't really keep records like that. So they
said, who needs this?
Well, a lot of their histories are told through a Christian point of view, which tends to demonize them on a lot of things. But over the years, they've been able to kind of pull out the actual truth of everything. And that's not to say they didn't keep their own records. But yes, this legend of Amleth would go on to inspire one William Shakespeare to write a little tragedy called Hamlet. And it's funny thing about that name Amleth is if you take the H off the end and you move it to the beginning, it spells Hamlet.
Oh?
Oh my god.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? All right. So, hey, this film was produced by Mark Huffman, Lars Knudsen, Robert Eggers, Alexander Skarsgård, and Amon Milchan. Cinematography by Yaron Blaschke. You know, I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher a lot of these names, and you all have my utmost respect, but I can't pronounce your names. Edited by Louise Ford. Music by Robert Carolyn and Sebastian Gainsborough. Robin Carolyn and Sebastian Gainsborough. And distributed by Focus Features. And
it was a nice little indie project for a whole $90 million.
Yeah, really. It's got a running time of 137 minutes. You hardly feel that runtime, honestly. It flew by. I know when we, before we went into the film, our friend was telling me, I heard it's got a pretty slow beginning, and it really picks up in the latter half. I don't know about you, but there wasn't a moment in this movie where I wasn't, like, so just, like, in the moment, just into whatever I was seeing.
Please finish.
No, just I hardly felt the runtime.
I don't think that I felt the runtime. I feel like it was, you know why? Their transitions were interesting. And that's why I wasn't paying attention to it. I was just kind of like, you kind of went on this weird, like, I don't want to call it like a ceremony. Mm-hmm. But like the rituals that they would perform in the film would just take you through the major scenes. Like that, those were your major transitions.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were pretty incredible. Yeah, like you said, the budget was $70 to $90 million, and so far it's made 44.3. You know, I would like a lot more people to go and see it, so it can do well and we'll get more movies like this made. But, you know, I don't go to a Robert Eggers movie to be like, this is going to be breaking the box office. I go to a Robert Eggers movie because I'm like, this dude knows how to make a mindfuck of a movie.
Yeah, for sure. But also, like, I felt like it was mindfuck in a different way that the other films were. Now, not that I know much about the other films, I haven't seen them, but from what I have seen, I felt like the mindfuck was more, like, in the spiritual side.
Absolutely.
And then it was in, like, the actual story and the events that were happening.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds about right. Let's talk about this cast, and then we'll dig into it. So, we have Alexander Skarsgård as Amleth, the Viking, the man. And it's funny, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but right as the movie started, I leaned over to you and I said, when we're watching this movie, just think of the Lion King. So Alexander Skarsgård, he's our Simba.
Yeah, he was a very sweet Simba.
Yeah. Nicole Kidman as Queen Gudrun. We'll talk about her.
Yikes.
Cleis Bang as Fjolnir. The Brotherless. Why is he the Brotherless? Because he killed a brother. Anya Taylor-Joy Kinslayer, as Olga.
Right?
Kinslayer. Yeah, Kinslayer and Kingslayer.
I was going to say, yeah.
Anya Taylor-Joy, you know, she has previously worked with Eggers on The Witch. She played Olga. Ethan Hawke showing up, fresh off his work with Moon Knight. Popping up here.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I was going to say, I like seeing him kind of in multiple places than at once.
Yep, it was pretty great. He played King Arvandil. Willem Dafoe as Heimar the Fool. Gustav Lind as Thorir the Proud. I don't know, there's a lot of people in this movie. Not all of them need to be named. Bjork shows up as a seer. That was pretty great. Kate Dickey, another Eggers collaborator, and from Game of Thrones, Lysa Arryn. She was a picked slave. And Ralph Ineson, again, another Robert Eggers alumni, was the captain of a ship that we see towards the end of the film. And the only other person I feel like I really want to highlight in this film is one who we both were watching the scene and we both went, oh, is that the mountain? Is the mountain?
It is. Yeah.
Hafþór Julius Björnsson as
fucking
Viking dude.
Recognize the hell out of him. I'm like, oh, that there's no other person I know that looks like that. Which is funny because if you saw photos of what he looked like after like his after he was competing in his strongman championship or whatever the fuck, he looked like, you know, less mountainesque, but he was pretty big.
I was like, what are the chances there are two just obnoxiously hulking Icelandic men?
Yeah.
In the acting world. But no, that is the mountain who rides, and it was great to see him in the scene he was in. But that's really it for the cast. There's so many people in this film, but not all of them are really worth digging into. But let's talk about the story, because I think it's a pretty basic story. Like you said, it's very straightforward. It isn't really trying to tell the witch. It's a very nuanced and complex story about faith and about abuse, kind of. And the lighthouse is like kind of like the bonds of men.
Yeah.
But kind of. I mean, it's complicated. This is really his most straightforward film. And in a way, this is kind of a testament, I feel, to an idea of a story does not have to be original when its execution is, like, pitch perfect. And I think this is a movie where the story is not original by any stretch, but its execution is so good that it doesn't matter.
I feel like there's a one aspect where I feel like the execution could have been better.
Oh?
And I'm going to just shit on her, and that's Nicole Kidman.
Okay. So, well, full spoilers from this point on. We're talking full spoilers for The Northman. If you haven't seen it, go see it. Come back, because we're going to talk about all this crazy stuff. 3, 2, 1. That's your warning. Get out.
Why was she in this movie?
No, I love it. Because, okay, so you have the story of, like, Hamlet or Simba or The Lion King, where I liked that it was a twist on that narrative, that the king who was killed, the Mufasa, who was this noble king, and he is killed by his treacherous brother, who takes over his kingdom, and the son goes off into hiding, vows his revenge, comes back, saves his mother, kills his wicked uncle, and saves the day and is a hero and becomes the king. And I love that every point of this, you know, we think that that's the case until, you know, towards the end, and we get that twist of like, no, hey, actually his uncle's kind of like a family man and like really cares for his children. Also, your father was apparently a real piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and your mom's crazy, and also
I like that it's almost like a more realistic version of Lion King for at that rate.
Yes.
You know? And that's the thing that it's like, okay, well, I like that they kind of, you know, they come back and they kind of crush the dreams of this, you know, character. It was not like a what do you call it? Like Luke Skywalker throws the lightsaber.
Oh yeah. It wasn't shitting on the audience.
Exactly. Where it was more like, I think because of the fact that we've been told this kind of story for so much that we have like these other spins. And like I said, I'm not really familiar with this tale in and of itself, but like the fact that, you know, I'm being exposed to it in this light, it's like, okay, it made it a little bit more interesting. But then it to kind of go to the point where now we're still continuing on this journey of Amleth's journey, and like he wants to go through with like his plan that he's had for 20 something years, even though there's opportunities, like, one, now he has newer information, two, now he has somebody that like he could kind of go with and like have a family with, and like he still leaves those behind and he goes through this, you know, journey of self-destruction is, but also like, you know, for like his honor or like his father's honor or something like that, like it does say a lot, and that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Robert Eggers, who is always so focused on, he wants to be as authentic to the time period that his movie is set in, the culture that it represents. And so, you know, depicting that like, just because it's the main characters, it's his father, doesn't mean he's going to be a noble king. He's depicted as being, you know, a Viking by any standard of Viking. He goes out, he raids, he brings back slaves, he takes his very young son into the seer's den, where they proceed to just like go on a vision quest together.
They've drugged the shit out of him.
They do so many drugs in this movie. And you know, like when Amleth gets away, it's not like he's off, you know, being a noble prince somewhere and biding his time and training in to be a noble savior. He's off doing more drugs in the forest, acting like a bear, and like just going on these horrible raids. And it's all to really show this Viking culture, which was a very rough, savage culture to live in, very patriarchal.
And I was also going to say, it doesn't really make much sense where they can get honor in some things, and then the literal thing that makes their culture thrive is the least honorable thing in the world.
Well, yeah, and I mean, like, they're, you know, the whole idea that you want to die a warrior's death, you want to, that's how you get to Valhalla, is you die with a sword in your hand on the battlefield, and
I think there's a reason why women live so long in those societies, Zach. I really do.
But then you have that scene after they raid the village or the town, and they take all the men and boys and old people, load them into the house and just set the house on fire. And you're like, fuck.
It sucked ass, dude.
But that's it's, you know what, I like that they portray the Vikings as what Vikings would have been like. Because I think there's this historically sanitized idea of the Vikings where they have the horned helms and they go around and they're rabble and they cause mischief, but you know.
Oh, there's that one adaptation where they ride dragons. You remember that one?
Listen, don't even talk about How to Train Your... I love that movie.
You know, dude, what movie I love is Minions.
Oh, man. Don't get me started on Minions. But but I like this idea, and I think Vikings itself also went a good way of showing the more realistic, uncomfortable side of Viking culture. Because I think a lot of people they'll idolize Vikings as these like badass warriors who were like, you know, no one fucked with a Viking, but also Vikings were like terrible people who took slaves and raped and pillaged and burned and murdered and did lots of drugs to addle themselves into a rage so they wouldn't feel pain. And
if anything, this film positions itself in a really great way as more of like a commentary on the way that Vikings lived and like why that it is fucking ridiculous as well. It presented in really, really detailed visuals, grotesque visuals, and like some of like just the funniest logic in the world.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But I love it. And then it kind of almost takes on like a fantasy feel to it, like when he goes to see Bjork, and
who's in this movie.
Yeah, and she's like, she tells him this prophecy. She's like, you know, you need to head north to Iceland, and you need to find this like Dragon Slayer sword, and you need to... What was the name of the sword? It had such a cool name. That whole sequence where they were talking about the sword and you watched it getting forged in the mountains. Yeah, I was like, this is the coolest shit I've ever seen.
I'll tell you what, there was that one moment where I felt like I was watching a scene out of Skyrim. Where we're fighting.
When he goes down into the crypt and he fights the Draugr.
Dude, I was like, this almost feels like Skyrim.
I want someone, once the Blu-ray's out or whatever, or it's on demand, to take that scene and add like the enemy encounter music from Skyrim to it.
Yes, please. But then, when all these, like...
A health bar at the top that says, like, Overlord Death Draugr.
Oh my god. But, like, when it would transition from, like, these, like, you know, the fantasy of, like, what he thought was happening and then, like, what actually happened. Like, we get, like, those are these transitions that are taking us to this film. Like, there's, like, a lot of, I don't want to call them dream sequences, but they all play a role of making everything, like, more interesting and showing, like, this parallel of, like, what they believe is, like, happening and then, like, what's actually, like, happening. Like, yeah, maybe in their culture it's all, like, a mental game as well. You know, they think about, like rites of passage and such. But then, like, you can kind of look at it from, like, another perspective. Like, oh, my God, he was just high this whole time. and he just pulled this sword off this dead guy.
Yeah. And, I mean, listen, it's a nice sword, but...
No, that was a dope-ass sword. That sword was sick. And he took it from this guy on a throne who died?
Yeah.
Awesome.
And,
that's the legendary sword right there. We're going to tell everybody that.
There's a couple of little moments in this film I want to ask your opinion on. One, the self-defense tactic of rubbing your period blood on someone's face. Because Anya Taylor-Joy whips that shit out, and I was like, oh, no. Like, yeah, you know what? Mood killer, that's effective.
Yeah.
Also, how about... when they, the game of Natalekker, or as I like to think of it, Viking soccer.
Viking soccer is fucking insane. Or, no, wait, it wasn't even soccer. It was like, it was more like, what do you call it? Rugby? Like
lacrosse?
No, I would call it rugby, or I guess lacrosse.
They had
but
sticks
like,
and they were whacking each other with them.
And that's our scene where we got, what's
the
his
mountain,
name?
Yeah.
With the mountain. And, like, what a fucking trip this was.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, dude, like, this scene had... This film had, like, so many different parts that I'm just, like, freaking out over, like, in my seat. Like, what the hell am I watching? Like, that was pretty cool, though. The very brutal game, very hard scene to watch. But also, like, super cool way to, like, show other parts of kind of Norse culture.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
That's a good way to... I want to segue into talking about... the action and the violence, because I don't think there was... The way I thought this was going to be was it was going to be a lot of violence and a lot of action throughout the movie, but there's only, like, a handful of scenes that really had some, like, intense bloodshed, but when it was there, it was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
The Viking lacrosse game was pretty intense, a lot of smacking of heads in that. But how about when Amleth just bashes the dude's nose off at the beginning of the film?
Yeah. That was also a great detail, too, because, like, as we saw that character, like, within the rest of the film, he just had, like, the scarring without the nose. And I think I even went over to your shoulder and whispered to you, like, dude, like, this could have been Tyrion in Game of Thrones.
That is how Tyrion should have looked. That's right.
Yeah.
And
I kind of liked it that detail lasted.
Yeah, that beautiful one shot, one take of him, of the siege on the village, or like, you know, the walled off town where they go in and, like, you know, he catches the spear and he throws it back and they run in and he's scaling the wall in this fantastic tracking shot. He's jumping down on people, hacking them to bits with his axe. I'm like, this is fucked up. But it's kind of, you know, it is awesome because that's how it's filmed, to be kind of awesome.
You were full of awe.
I was. There was some awe.
There was some. Or I guess awful would have been full of awe. But
yeah,
I'll tell you what. With all of this, and then we would get like some of the like the most epic music.
Dude, I loved the music.
The music was pretty good.
Dude, especially at the beginning. The beginning when Ethan Hawke is returning to his home, and they have the horns going, and it's just so atmospheric, and it's so intense, and man, when that's happened, I was like, I fucking love this film.
Dude, I want to say it was when we started seeing, like, the trees, like, the Tree of Life, like, things.
Oh, Yggdrasil, yeah.
It has a name?
Yggdrasil, yeah. The world tree.
The world tree?
Yeah, you know, the tree that holds up Midgard and around one of the nine realms, Asgard,
I know that one.
Jotunheim.
Yes, okay. Now we're talking the language. Thank you, Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And, you know, there's the Midgard Serpent, and right.
Thor. Listen, when we got the music in and out of these moments, actually, even, like, during that earliest moment, too, like, during like the with Ethan Hawke, where we were kind of doing the first ritual for him to become a man, so to speak.
Right.
That was pretty cool. There was this, I don't want to call it the obsession, but the way they treated animals in this film, I didn't feel like PETA would have been very pleased.
I mean, that's life. That's life in Viking times.
I remember thinking to myself, like, they, like, what do they cut that fucking whole horse's head in, like, the nastiest of ways? I'm just thinking about some of the earlier scenes. I'm like, fuck.
Speaking of, hey, you know, Chris, you know what would help that sinus infection of yours? That one scene where Amleth goes up to the dude who's missing his nose and just slow stabs his sword into his face. And you can just, like, see this dude's, like, brain short-circuiting as, like, the sword just goes. It's so slow.
Why?
It's so slow.
Why did they do that?
You know, there's the moment. They had one of those. One of the movies that did that also was Ex Machina. They had a very slow stab in that, and it's just the most horrible thing to witness.
It was just not the nicest thing.
But, man.
I feel like it was probably. It's just the amount of time that had been taken into the. I don't know. You know what I'm talking about? Like, where you're going. Like. All right. I can't keep talking about it. To be honest, I'm thinking about it too hard. I do want to go back to one of my original points, though. Please. Why Nicole Kidman was probably the worst part about this film.
No. When you say worst, I think it's a fantastic reversal of expectation. I think it's such a great moment of, like...
Like, you expect her to be good, and she's god-awful?
Yes. I think it's...
Was she deliberately supposed to be god-awful? Because I think also her performance was not that great.
I thought her performance was fine. I just thought I was not expecting it. I was expecting her to be like, you're here to save me and blah, blah, blah. But when he's like, I saw them carrying you off and you were screaming. And she's like, I was laughing. And I'm like, oh, fuck. No.
Oh, I was just more like, I don't know that I liked even her accent and shit. And I'm like, oh, wow.
Well, she's not Australian, so she's doing the best she can.
Yeah, I don't know. I just did not think this role fit her so perfectly.
I thought she did a pretty good job, but it was just that and then of course it had to go.
Is what I would call it.
It had to go from like freaky and crazy to just very upsetting when she tried to make a move on her son, and she's like, "Oh, if you kill my husband, then you'll be the king, and I will be your queen." And I'm like, "Hold the fuck up!"
I'm telling you, dude. If this man really is a genius, and it seems like people really love this film, it has like an 89% of Rotten Tomatoes.
That's right.
I just looked at it. I'm like, it's because everybody knows he has a fucking commentary on all this shit. And it's and it's because, one, what the fuck is with these people? Two, like, how am I going to tell this story and also show that this guy it was that much of a jackass that, yeah, he still went and got himself killed so he could have his vengeance? Oh, actually, you know what? That was a cool ass scene. That final battle in the volcano.
Oh my god,
that was badass.
That was intense.
That was intense.
Oh my god, I was like, don't step in the lava.
But that was awesome. That was fucking cool.
And oh, what a finish! What a finish!
Yeah, but like, also, why didn't he come to that? And also, how the fuck are you gonna let some seer tell you that this woman's gonna have two of your kids? How is she gonna have two of your kids if you're dead?
Well, he already did the hard work.
Is he gonna have twins?
Yeah, maybe.
I guess that's how it's supposed
to be. They doinked in the woods. There's a point when they were like chilling with each other in the woods post coitus, and I'm like, this is just two absurdly beautiful people.
it's a really fitting quote. It's from Talladega Nights. He's like, you said I was going to have two kids. I was high when I said that. Imagine Bjork comes out and says, I was high when I said that.
I mean, she probably was. Everyone in that movie.
That's the thing. How the fuck are we supposed to know?
But yeah, I mean, just the whole end of the film is kind of crazy. Because it's a bit, you know, of a downer. He has this chance to be just leave it all behind, leave his vengeance behind, go away with his new hot wife, and like just be a king somewhere else. And he's like, nah, I gotta kill my uncle. And it's kind of a shame, because I mean, listen, it's Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, she would have been like a better choice than, you know, your own demise.
Yeah, and well, it's funny because like he is able to cut off Fjolnir's head, and then Fjolnir runs him through with his sword, and he's like, it ends with him like laying there, and like dying, and he like has like one last vision of his sons, or his children. I don't know if they were both boys. But you know what? The thing is, Chris, we're looking at this from the perspective of dudes in the 21st century
I can't help but not do that,
Zachary. In modern civilization, we just have, that's our own sensibilities. But you gotta remember, for Vikings, this is how you die. This is the most honorable way to die, with a sword in your hand, dying in the field of battle. And that's why, in the scope of the movie, which is telling it from the Viking perspective, he is rewarded for his death, for his good death. The Valkyries, you know, guide him into the gates of Valhalla.
I had no idea who those people were at first. I was like, who? I did not understand this. And I'm like, oh, wait. Valkyries.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember that from Thor. Love and Thunder, was it?
Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok. And I'm like, oh, God. Like, I really knew nothing about the North Myths. The Norse myths. Oh, my God.
But dude, that final shot of, like, the Valkyrie, like, riding up to Valhalla and the gates opening up, I was like, this is so, just so cool.
Yeah, dude. No, it was fucking awesome.
And that's, you know, and that he was a North man.
Yeah. Can't wait for the sequel, The Southman.
The Southman.
It'll be about an Argentinian in a village. That would be very interesting, wouldn't it?
He just makes some delicious steaks.
Oh, he's a gaucho.
Yes, he makes some steaks, and that's all he does, man.
Dude, that would be fucking awesome.
Great. This is a very weird sequel to this movie.
Well, you know, we did once hear about the fucking, what is his name? The Jungleman. I'm sorry, I'm distracted by the name that they chose now. What is it, like, the Sea of Thieves, that's a game.
What, you talking about?
Avatar 2.
The Way of Water.
Yeah, the Way of Water is what it is.
It's dumb. I like Return of the Jungleman so much better.
They should have hired us.
Yeah, they should have.
Thanks, Disney.
I would have given them a better story than Dances with Wolves in Space.
Probably.
But, you know, whatever.
Probably. Or Pocahontas, dude. It's or anything.
I would say James Cameron, there's some culturally insensitive implications of having a white man turn into the race that is played predominantly by black people that maybe you're not realizing. Also, they're fucking the horse.
Yeah. And I think that definitely, like, you know, plays a big fucking role.
You know, they're going to be fucking so many animals in the next 5 movies.
I don't, honestly.
Poor animals.
Oh, like the whales, Zach?
Yeah, Evans. They're going to be fucking the whales.
Oh, my God. Well, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm not happy about it.
This has been another exciting edition of Scripter's Creed.
Yeah.
Catch us next time where we talk about Avatar 2.
Oh, but, Lord. If you have listened this far and you still haven't seen The Northmen, why'd you ruin it for yourself? But
I'm glad you didn't go see that movie, you know, because I was enamored with... I had many questions.
Yeah, I loved it. It was great. I definitely want to see it again as soon as I can. Preferably,
maybe with a blindfold.
Preferably while it's still in the theater, because I felt like the scale of the big screen really helped just sell the whole spectacle of it.
For sure.
And especially because we saw it in a Dolby theater, so the sound was incredible. So when you had these like thundering musical scores, it was just like, I felt like the room was shaking.
You're getting that perfect 8 tracks. I don't know what the max is now, but they have a bunch. At least 7.1 of them.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's fantastic. And I'm looking forward to whatever Robert Eggers decides to do next. And there's so many more movies on the way that too many that look good. Did you see the trailer for this Don't Worry, Darling?
Oh, I did. Florence Pugh. Yes.
And Harry Styles, Chris Pine, Olivia Wilde.
Talk about a movie that was probably going to be a breath of fresh air versus the fucking Northmen.
hey, don't talk shit about the Northmen. That movie was awesome.
I mean, I don't know that I talk shit about it, but I definitely talked about it for the last hour. But I am excited for Don't Worry, Darling. Looks very good.
Looks creepy and awesome. And
Zach, where do you think folks could go to listen about Don't Worry, Darling in the future?
Well, yeah, I mean, when it eventually is out and we inevitably cover it, I would assume they could go to our website.
www.scriptorscreen?
Yeah, .com.
anchor.fm/scriptorscreen?
Yeah, or they could find us on different podcast apps such as Spotify, such as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, iHeartRadio,
You got it.
Have any others? Anywhere. Honestly.
Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram.
Here you go, Anchor. Here's a freebie for you, Anchor. Anchor's great because we don't pay for Anchor. It's a free service, but they put us on everything.
Dude, so, we love them for that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Anchor. And,
nobody does what you can.
Nobody. But, I think that's about it. I'm trying to think if there's any other good things. Obi-Wan Kenobi?
There was a trailer for that just happened. And oh my God. I'll tell you, dude, I was so excited to see that. I had chills, literal chills. My asshole's open. I am such a hoe for Star Wars. It's not even funny.
Ooh, and House of the Dragon, we got our first full trailer for that.
This last trailer, I don't know how I felt about it.
I thought it was pretty good. We got Matt Smith as Daemon Targaryen. We got, what's her name, is Rhaenyra?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm ready to be hurt again.
We'll see, dude. I don't know how much hurt we're going to be doing. We're going to be doing. I need to go take my fucking medicine. This is getting ridiculous.
Thank you all of our lovely listeners for putting up with our nonsense bullshit episode after episode. We're glad to be back. We're going to be coming back very soon with Doctor Strange, with Moon Knight, probably some other things that aren't Marvel related.
Honestly, It's good to be back, Zach. It's good
it
to
is.
Be back.
It is.
And with that being said, thank you so much for listening, and have a wonderful rest of your days.
Bye.